Kyiv under fire again.
But I should say that, and actually a lot of people who I talk to here in Kyiv say the same thing, that this is getting them only, you know, angrier towards Russia.
Plus a potential problem with the Black Sea Grain Initiative.
Kyiv said 50 vessels were waiting for inspection in Turkish waters, ready to deliver 2.4 million tons of Ukrainian food abroad. Some vessels had waited for inspections for more than 3 months.
And later in the program, a conversation about F-16s. Are they really worth the trouble? Today is Friday, June 2nd. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. Ukrainian air defenses have managed to shoot down more than 30 Russian cruise missiles and drones. This as Moscow continues its attack on Ukraine's capital. AP correspondent Karen Chamas reports.
The air offensive was Moscow's sixth attack in 6 days on Kyiv. Officials say the capital was simultaneously targeted from different directions by Iranian-made drones and cruise missiles. Several people were injured, and private houses, outbuildings, and cars sustained damage from falling debris. The recent spate of attacks on the capital has put a strain on residents as they wait for an upcoming counteroffensive promised by Kyiv authorities. I'm Karen Chamas.
A group of pro-Ukrainian forces said Friday they were fighting Russian troops on the outskirts of a village just inside Russia's western border, a day after Moscow said it had repelled 3 cross-border attacks. Attacks on Russia, including a major incursion into its western Belgorod region on May 22nd and 23rd, have increased in recent weeks, as it's widely believed that Kyiv is preparing to launch a big push to recapture tracts of Russian-occupied land in its east and south. The groups responsible for the incursions into Russian territory say they are trying to liberate Russians from the Kremlin.
After the previous incursion into the gray Voron area of Belgorod, we have not made empty promises. It was indeed the beginning. Today, we are conducting another big-scale advance into the Belgorod region. Now it is in the Shebekino area. This time, significantly bigger liberation forces enter the territory of Russia, and fighting is going on as we speak. The aim is to liberate Belgorod region first, then move deeper into Russia, possibly Bryansk region, Kursk region, the ultimate goal in Moscow.
Russia says the groups are terrorists, acting as proxies for Ukraine, and says that 2 people were killed and 2 others injured in what they described as Ukrainian shelling of the Belgorod region. The Freedom of Russia Legion denied that and blamed Russia for the shelling, posting images on Telegram of what it said was one of its tanks and several soldiers taking cover behind a wall during a gunfight. The attacks aim to stretch Russian defenses and force Moscow to divert troops from inside Ukraine to shore up the border. Alexei Baranovsky, a spokesman for the political wing of the Freedom of Russia Legion, told Reuters on Thursday.
One of our tactical aims is to draw Russian troops from other parts of the Ukrainian front, to force them to relocate substantial forces from the front lines in Ukraine and bring them to protect their borders. That's one aim. The other is to show Russians that a different country is possible, that an armed group has appeared that is ready to struggle for freedom. We want people to join us, and it is going well.
The groups claim to be anti-Kremlin Russian volunteer fighters attacking Russia under their own direction and not the orders of Ukraine, which denies involvement. Examining the attacks on Kyiv and the incursion into Russia, Anna Chernikova joins us with the latest.
It was another overnight attack. It was quite Well, it was quite intense again. According to the official sources, the city of Kyiv itself mainly was attacked. And the city of Kyiv was attacked with 21 drones and 15 missiles. All of them were destroyed by the air defense. For the moment, we don't have any confirmation of the damages due to debris fall.
Now, Anna, these attacks have been going on almost nightly for the past several days and nights. What's the attitude like in Kyiv? You told me earlier that people were kind of angry and resilient. Is that still the case, or are people getting worn down and sick of it?
Just yesterday, we got the updated data in terms of May attacks on Kyiv particularly, and the attacks were happening 20 nights out of 31. So you can imagine how people were suffering through this month. But I should say that, and actually a lot of people who I talk to here in Kyiv say the same thing, that this is getting them only, you know, angrier towards Russia and Russian actions. This is not something that would make Ukrainians, at least this is how it feels here inside the country, this is not something that would make Ukrainians ask Russia for negotiations if Russia has this in mind with these attacks, for instance. But of course, people are getting tired, people are getting not enough sleep, and the stress is higher. But again, as I already said, this makes people just angrier, and just, you know, I can say that making Russia in general, making people hate Russia in general even more.
Now, we know that Kyiv isn't the only area being attacked. There were explosions inside Russia and inside Russian-occupied territory.
We do know that in terms of occupied territories, it was a huge explosion in Berdyansk, which is in the south of Ukraine. And Ukrainian authorities commented on that, saying that Ukrainian forces managed to hit the concentration of Russian forces somewhere in that area, Berdyansk. And in terms of Russian territory, we're also hearing that, again, this we're hearing from the Russian sources, from Russian bloggers and Russian and this Russian independent battalions who are quite active right now in the territory of Russia. So they're posting videos of explosions on the territory of Russia. In some areas, we are hearing that heads of the regions are saying that it was a drone attack over the night. And in some areas, there is no explanation of the fire, but it's definitely something that, well, it's definitely something happens inside of Russia.
And finally, Anna, today, the last thing I want to discuss is something that's been in the news in Ukraine. It seems that somebody, an unnamed source, has been talking to Sky News about possible Russian losses in Bakhmut. Can you tell us what's happening?
Yes, it was an article in Sky News with certain comments by certain Western official who was talking on anonymous basis that actually, so basically the fight for Bakhmut is almost a year now, and this official is saying that apparently Russia has lost already 60,000 men in this battle, which made it possible for them to take control over the main part of the city. At the same time, we're hearing from Ukrainian authorities that Ukrainian forces still control the surrounding area of Bakhmut. So basically, Russians are having control of the city, but Ukrainian forces still have control of the surroundings and of the high points around the city. And what is definitely, and this is discussed by everyone, not only inside Ukraine, but also with international allies, that losses of Russia in Bakhmut are just enormous.
And we'll leave it there for today. Anna Chernikova in Kyiv. Anna, as always, thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Steve.
Ukraine's Ministry of Renovation and Infrastructure said on Thursday that the UN-brokered Black Sea grain export deal has been halted again because Russia has blocked the registration of ships to all Ukrainian ports. Reuters' Francis McGuire has the story.
Ukraine says Russia is again blocking the UN-backed Black Sea grain deal. Kyiv accused Moscow on Thursday of halting the registration of ships to all Ukrainian ports. A UN spokesman said Russia told officials it would limit registrations to the port of Pivdenia in Ukraine's Odessa province. The UN and Turkey brokered the Black Sea Grain Initiative last July. It's designed to tackle a global food crisis made worse by Russia's invasion of Ukraine, which is a leading grain exporter. Russia agreed to a two-month extension of the deal in May. But it now says it will halt the deal unless an agreement is fulfilled to overcome obstacles to exports on its own grain and fertilizer. The UN said there had been a continuous slowdown in vessel departures from April through May. It also said the average daily inspection rate for ships had fallen to 3. The Ukrainian ministry claimed Russia had registered only one incoming ship for inspection in the last 2 days of May. It called that a gross violation of the initiative. Russia did not immediately comment on the ministry's statement. Kyiv said 50 vessels were waiting for inspection in Turkish waters, ready to deliver 2.4 million tons of Ukrainian food abroad. Some vessels had waited for inspections for more than 3 months.
That's Reuters' Francis McGuire reporting. You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Karish. President Joe Biden spoke to graduates of the Air Force Academy on Thursday at an uncertain time for global peace, amid bitter conflict in Ukraine and China's growing military ambitions. VOA spoke to an alumnus of the Academy who graduated at another uncertain time, the Vietnam era, about what it was like to be in that seat more than 50 years ago. Anita Powell reports from Washington.
Please welcome the graduating class of 2023.
President Joe Biden delivered warm words and a sober warning as he addressed graduates of the U.S. Air Force Academy.
The world you're graduating into is not only changing rapidly, the pace of change is accelerating as well. We're seeing proliferating global challenges from Russia's aggression and brutality in Europe, our competition with China, and a whole hell of a lot in between.
And he said, the skies matter more than ever.
We're going to count on you to keep us at the forefront of air and space dominance, enabling an entire joint force to be stronger.
This graduating class, forged in the uncertainty of the COVID-19 pandemic, emerges into an uncertain world. For some alumni, the sensation is familiar. Lou Hatch graduated in 1970 and joined the elite Ravens Air Squadron, which flew classified missions over Laos.
Their key to survival was our air support. And that's the reason the Ravens were there. We were there to direct the airstrikes and provide the air support for our Laotian allies on the ground. And that holds pretty much true today. Same thing was true in Afghanistan. Same thing is true in Ukraine. And you have to own the airspace, and the ability to deliver ordnance from the air is the key to the battle.
The program was declassified in the mid-1980s, but they kept so few records that Hatch can only estimate that 5 of his 9-member cohort were shot down. 22 members of his squadron were killed in action. VOA asked if he'd do it again.
Oh, in a heartbeat.
Why?
While I lost a lot of friends there, it was one of the most rewarding things I've ever done in my life. And I think almost to a man, most Ravens will tell you that.
These new airmen and women know a lot rides on them. But as their superintendent reminded the families in attendance, not so long ago, they were children. Lieutenant General Richard Clark, U.S. Air Force Academy superintendent.
And if your kids were like mine, they're tearing up your house, they're eating all your food, they're copying teenage attitudes, they're spending all your money. And I know that some of you thought, how in the world is this person going to be a functioning adult? But today, I guarantee you, these graduating cadets are far more than that. They are the most promising young leaders of our nation. with a sense of duty and honor to serve and lead our airmen and our guardians.
Will their future hold friendly skies or troubled ones? Anita Powell, VOA News, Washington.
And another Air Force sort of story. We know that Ukraine will soon be getting some F-16 fighter jets, a development that was not without controversy. But what can the F-16s do in the battle against Russia? What can't they do? And are they worth it? I'm joined by Bryn Tannehill of the RAND Corporation. And so in your recent article, you're saying that the F-16s are going to be a big help, but they're also going to be a lot of work for Ukraine. Can you tell us what are the challenges that are going to come to Ukraine once they get F-16s?
So some of the big challenges are, first, employment, right? You've got to employ them the way that they were intended within kind of a Western combined arms NATO mindset. The F-16s were designed to operate within NATO air forces, right? If you try and operate these exactly the way you operated the old MiG-29s, you're not going to get the most out of them. And you're going to have issues.
Well, what does that mean? What does that mean? Doesn't a pilot just hop in and fly and shoot what they need to shoot?
It's more complicated than that. You have some of it is digital connection between aircraft. Some of it is how you think about employing it. Some of it is that the aircraft are radically different in terms of their capabilities. So an example I would give is the older MiG-29 has these flaps that are on the air intakes. That what it does is it allows it to draw air into the engines from above the fuselage, and that allows them to do takeoffs and landings from highways without worrying about ingesting rocks and twigs and stuff and damaging the engine, right? The F-16 has its air intake mounted underneath the cockpit, essentially, right next to the runway. And it doesn't have a similar system that allows it to block out air from underneath the aircraft and pull in air from above, meaning it's much more vulnerable to ingesting debris. And it's only got one engine, vice two engines. We already talked about training pilots. Training pilots, we figured out, is going to take about 4 months to give them just the information they need to fight the kind of fight that they're expecting. The audience needs to understand is that this is not going to allow Ukraine to gain air dominance.
The F-16s.
And that's with the F-16s or air superiority or even possibly air parity. The problem with these F-16s is that they were designed as a lightweight multi-role fighter. They were not designed as an air superiority fighter. The Russians have aircraft that are much larger with giant, powerful radars that can put an ungodly amount of radiation in the air. And these radars aren't old. The radars that they're using are good APG-66s, but they're still old and they still don't get that much power because the F-16 is small and light, right? It doesn't have that much energy that it could put out in terms of radio waves. It also, the Russians have things like the MiG-31 and the Sukhoi-35 that have radars that can see further that are much more modern. They also have missiles like the R-37 that are faster and have much longer range, which means that in general, the Russians also have AWACS aircraft to help things see from very far away. So in general, the Russians are going to be able to see Ukrainian F-16s before their F-16s can see the Russians. And they're going to be able to shoot at the Ukrainian aircraft before the Ukrainian aircraft can shoot back, which gives the Russian aircraft a distinct advantage in air-to-air, you know, beyond visual range combat.
So they've got this new airplane. It's a lot more complicated. It has some extra requirements that the Ukrainians are going to have to fulfill. Overall, is it worth them having? Is it a good thing for them?
In the long run, yes, it's very much a good thing. One thing we didn't talk about is sustainability, which is you're going to need parts and maintenance for the aircraft and have access to the manufacturers who would help maintain the aircraft and maintain a supply of spares. Long term, Ukraine wants to integrate with NATO, and part of integrating with NATO is integrating with NATO supply systems, integrating with NATO manufacturers, integrating with NATO data networks, tactics, weapon systems that you hang off of the aircraft. And all of this furthers Ukraine's ability to be integrated into NATO down the line.
Bryn Tannehill is a former naval aviator and a senior technical analyst at the nonprofit, nonpartisan RAND Corporation. Bryn, thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate your time and your analysis.
Thank you very much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Oscar De La Renta, Calvin Klein, Alexandro Alonso Rojas, and many others produce their collections with hand-knit products made by Ukrainian women. It's been over a year since Russia invaded Ukraine, but despite the war, these women continue to work. Nina Vishneva has the story, narrated for us today by Anna Rice.
On the pages of fashion magazines and on the catwalk, clothing pieces knitted by Ukrainian women can be seen in the world of high fashion.
Knitting, fashion, it distracts me from the most horrible things from what is going on in Ukraine right now.
Lena, who didn't want VOA to use her last name, is one of many Ukrainian women who knit pieces of art like these, in some cases while working in a basement while shelling is underway.
Today I was calling one other woman in Kryvyi Rih regarding knitting, and she said, Lena, I cannot talk right now, there is shelling.
Lena supervises dozens of knitters all around Ukraine, including Kyiv, Kherson, and Kryvyi Rih. They knit even when the electricity goes out, only by candlelight. Still, they manage to create handmade masterpieces that American fashion brands are including in fashion shows. Libby Tolm works with both the Ukrainian women and U.S. designers as the CEO of her Texas-based company, Elite Knitting.
We worked with Alejandra Alonso Rojas. We worked with Zach Pazan. We did some work for Calvin Klein as well.
Tolm says designers know the women's plight.
At the start of the war, Oscar De La Renta helped us a lot. They knew all of our knitters are located in Ukraine, so they created a GoFundMe page. And we were able to pay our knitters for 3 months of their work in advance, before we received a single piece from them.
Tolm says sometimes they don't hear from their knitters for months. With Russian forces destroying communication infrastructure, it is sometimes difficult for the women to get in touch.
Every time we ask them how they are doing, and every time we are afraid to hear what they have to say.
Tolm says many of the knitters had a chance to escape to Poland, a move that would have made their work easier. But she adds, so far, every one of them has chosen to live and work in Ukraine. For Nina Vishneva in New York, Anna Rice, VOA News.
And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day. Visit us online at voanews.com and on social media, be sure to follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish.
This is the voice of America, Washington, D.C.